This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. Today's show is a bit of a gumbo. You know, a mixture of things. First, we'll talk about Pop-Up Magazine's winter issue tour with Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings, host of Gimlet's podcast, The Nod. Then, Tegan Wendlin chats with the Lenses Della Hassell about a state report to help coastal communities. And later, the authors of Pulse of Perseverance tell us about their book and more. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us.
Good morning, evening, friend.
Pop-Up Magazine is a live magazine created for a stage, a screen, and a live audience. The internationally renowned live magazine works with filmmakers, artists, and podcast voices to perform stories, scores, and more. A couple of those performers include Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings, host of the popular podcast, The Nod. They join me now to talk more about Pop-Up Magazine. Brittany, Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
As I mentioned, you guys are host of Gimlet's podcast, The Nod. Tell us what it's all about.
So The Nod is, I guess you'd say it's a storytelling podcast where we feature stories that capture, as we like to say, all the beautiful, complicated dimensions of Black life.
Yeah.
So you get, with that umbrella, as large as it is, you get a lot of really interesting stuff.
We have reported stories about the origins of grape flavoring and like soda and like other types of soft drinks. We had an episode where Eric tried to figure out whether or not he was going to send his daughter to an Afrocentric preschool or not. We had an episode about this family from North Carolina that stayed on a plantation long after slavery had ended. We also have had really fun conversations about the Black Bachelorette, about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle's upcoming nuptials. Like, we talk about everything on the show.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I want to point out that you two have a pretty dynamic chemistry. How long have you been working together?
We've only been working together since, I guess, 2014. So we're working together a little over 3 years, almost four. We have been friends since 2005.
There it is.
overstayed the welcome.
Yeah.
So aside from your podcast, you guys are currently on the winter issue tour of the Pop-Up Magazine. Explain to us how this live magazine is orchestrated.
Well, it's presented, they call it like a night of live journalism. And I feel like what you actually experience kind of goes so much like further than that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you basically have this list of like really, really like great contributors who come out and they present to you a little slice of a story.
Yeah.
And it just takes you in so many different directions. Like, you can expect to laugh, you can expect to cry, you can expect to, you know, maybe even be mad or frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just get all those emotions and experiences through these really great and creative stories.
Yeah, and it's not just like someone's getting up on stage and just like talking to you. You're going to hear bits of audio, of music. You're going to watch films. You're going to see photos. I've even been to pop-up shows where they've had dance before. So it's really just like a complete range of experiences all packaged into like a 2-hour event.
Mm-hmm.
Just come ready for like everything.
Come ready.
Is this your first time touring with the Pop-Up Magazine?
It's our first time together, yeah.
So tell us about that first show you guys did in San Francisco a few weeks ago.
Oh, my God. It was so great.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, the audience was just electric. And, like, they were with us. I would say our segment has some comedic undertones.
It does.
And
overtones also.
And the audience was just really into it. So it was so nice just being in front of the crowd and having them really kind of understand what we were trying to present. And kind of vibe with it. It's very intimate. You know, you're just you and the audience.
Well, also, too, the thing is like, when we make a podcast, we're in a studio, we're with each other and, you know, our producers, and then there's not that immediate feedback. We record something, we put it out, and you don't really know how people feel about it.
Yeah.
One thing to get tweets or emails or to see people, and they're like, oh, I love this episode. But to, like, tell a joke on stage and then get that immediate feedback of laughter is just so satisfying.
Yeah. Who are some of the other performers sharing the stage with you guys?
There's Albert Smaha, who is a reporter for BuzzFeed. He has a really cool story. Also, James Bennett from WNYC in New York. He has a really, really amazing story.
Veena Rao.
Oh, Veena Rao. She has an incredible story.
Yes. She is she's like a filmmaker, and her story is just is beautiful. Like, okay. I don't want to spoil it, but it's great. So go see it.
The other thing is that no two pop-up shows are exactly the same. Even though there is a tour, and, like, there are some of us who are on every single stop, and, like, maybe half the people are on at least, like, half of the stops, there are still some people who are, you know, going to perform a song that you're not going to hear in another city, or they're going to, you know, tell a story that you're not going to hear in another city that makes every single performance totally unique.
Okay, so you just mentioned that each show is unique, and the pop-up magazine is making its debut right here in New Orleans next week. Are you guys strangers to the city at all?
Not at all.
Not anymore. Well, Eric had been previously, but we first went. My first trip was last August. Eric and I came for NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists Conference, and it was our first time going there together, and I don't think you can have too much fun in New Orleans.
Yeah.
But we came very close.
We had way too much fun for it to not be Mardi Gras.
And also a work trip.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, speaking of Mardi Gras, you just missed Mardi Gras.
I know. Oh. We're trying to get back down there.
Mm-hmm. With some king cake.
Yeah.
So earlier I mentioned the chemistry that you two have. Could you tell us what kind of stories folks could expect to hear during your performance for the live magazine show?
So we're kind of breaking down one, like, very specific thing.
Yes. It's a very specific thing. We don't want to give too much away.
So you can't tell us the one specific thing?
We can tell you the
thing.
A
little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can tell you the thing.
So we are going to be talking about this kind of this genre of art that we call Black History art. And it is very unique.
Very unique.
But very great. And, you know, it's Black History Month right now. It's a great time.
Yes.
So we will be walking you on a trip through this genre of art and through history.
Yes. And you're going to laugh a lot.
Black history art in the city where there's so much culture.
Yes.
I'm sure folks are looking forward to catching that.
We hope so.
We hope so.
So with the pop-up magazine coming to New Orleans, is there anything else that'll be different from this show than the others?
I think that there are some surprises that we don't even know about yet.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily always know who's going to join the tour on which cities, but I think that, like, there's enough that we know about from, like, the shows that we've seen before. That we just know that, like, if you go to see pop-up, you're going to have an amazing time. And like Eric said, you're going to laugh, you're going to cry. Like, I would say if you're going to attend a pop-up show, you need to bring a box of tissues, some maracas, and maybe like a martini or something like that. You're just going to have a blast.
All right, I made my list. Thanks so much.
Well, a hurricane, considering the location.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have a hurricane at the show.
That was Brittany Luce and Eric Eddings of Gimlet's The Nod. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having
us. Thank you so much.
Catch the podcast duo performing with a host of others during Pop-Up Magazine's winter issue tour, which debuts in New Orleans on February 23rd. For tickets and more information, visit popupmagazine.com. As the state grapples with how to prevent land loss with big projects like river diversions and rebuilding barrier islands, officials are also grappling with how to help people who live on the coast. After meeting with thousands of coastal residents over the past year, the state is working on a report to help coastal communities deal with erosion and sea level rise. WWNO's Tegan Wendland talked with Della Hassell, a reporter with The Lens, about the report.
Hi, Della.
Hi, Tegan.
This is something we've reported on a lot, this program called LA Safe. It's run by the Office of Community Development, and it got a big grant from the federal government for this outreach program. They've been holding public meetings all over the coast and asking people for input on how coastal communities might adapt to climate change, rising seas, and land loss. So what are some of the ideas that they got from these meetings?
So about 4,000 people overall came to these meetings over the course of a year. Some things that came out of these meetings were ideas for small things, such as water taxis, things like helping people train for careers in the coast, helping the fishing industry, for example. Then there were broader ideas to come out of this, things like relocation programs for people who might have to move as flooding increases in the state. These are voluntary programs. They would incentivize people to help get out of these flood-prone areas.
So the state took all of this input, and it's putting together a report. And the report isn't public yet, but you were able to get some of the draft documents from LA Safe. So what did they include?
The documents I got included a sheet of recommended policies. They're policies that are being considered for a report the state is going to put out later this year. In that report, however, are not just the policies that you and I are talking about, but they're also recommending pilot projects for each parish, and each parish will get its own plan of sorts for advising local governments about how communities can deal with the changing coast.
So the state has acknowledged that even if the coastal master plan is fully implemented, some people will still need to move. We can't save everyone on the coast. So are these documents kind of a blueprint for a plan for how that will work or what?
State officials told me that it's unclear exactly what will go into that plan as of yet. Right now, the policies that we're talking about are just ideas at this point. They're ideas that were floated by residents, other community members. They were put together by planning officials who work with the state. The state is planning to publish this report later this year. At that point, we'll get a clearer idea of how many of these policies will actually make it in to a broader framework.
So it could go to the legislature or the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority?
State officials have told me that the blueprint they're going to put together will be for anyone who deals with the coast. It could be for local governments to help imagine how they can make their communities more resilient in the future. It could be for the Coastal Master Plan. The idea is to get ahead of the Coastal Master Plan a little bit to help inform these governments and the state as well about how to prepare for the future.
What are the broader goals of this report then? Are officials trying to get people to move away from the coast?
The state has said in no uncertain terms that they are not doing any kind of mandatory relocation. It's been very controversial, and they've balked at any idea or suggestion that that's what they're doing. However, some of these policy ideas would incentivize people to move away from the coast, and it would also make it harder for them to live in these really high-risk areas. Mm. It would make it harder for them to live there because it would be more expensive for them.
It sounds like this report might not go over very well with some local officials. You talked to some. What did they tell you?
So Plaquemines Parish President Amos Cormier is one of the people who really dislikes some of the proposals that he's seen. He told me that it's patently clear that some of them are against the residents' interests, at least in his area.
So he's pretty upset about this potential report coming out and what it would mean for Plaquemines.
I think he's very anxious about what the report will show. And exactly what it will mean for residents in that area. Some of the things that have been proposed include buyouts, which might help people. But they've also included such ideas like prohibiting new development in high-risk areas or the elimination of homestead exemptions, which would make taxes a lot higher for people who live in these high-risk areas.
Sure. So it seems like the report might kind of incentivize getting people to move away from the coast to safer areas by developing these policies that make life on the coast more expensive. So is that really equitable? Would that make life for poor people on the coast even harder?
It could. It is important, though, to note that we're not sure that that's going to make it into the report. I think especially after these policy ideas have gotten attention, state officials have said that they're really taking a hard look at what goes into this report and what doesn't.
So I went to a lot of these LA Safe meetings, and they had charts and maps, and they seemed to be trying to show people that some migration inland was already happening. But they were also asking people how they think their communities could adapt to land loss. Aside from housing proposals that kind of encourage people to move to higher ground, what else is LA Safe doing?
That's a great question. LA Safe is also trying to help people adapt to the future in ways that doesn't just mean helping people get away from areas, but also helping areas build out when more people come in. So when population increases in some areas because they're fleeing others, the state is going to have to deal, state and local communities are going to have to deal with that population increase. So some ideas to help those areas include building out water retention programs in areas like parks. There's also the idea to help retrofit transportation routes to better deal with flooding in the future so people can get around more easily.
All this planning is kind of hard to wrap your head around in a way, and it kind of sounds a little touchy-feely sometimes. But the takeaway, it seems, is, you know, the state is trying to create a plan or a blueprint to deal with the human aspect of coastal land loss.
That's exactly it. So the Coastal Master Plan deals with a lot of technical aspects to how to deal with flooding in the future. What is happening now is state officials are trying to better figure out how to help communities without vastly changing how they look.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Della Hassell. We look forward to reading your story in The Lens.
Thank you.
Support for the Coastal Desk comes from the Walton Family Foundation, the Foundation for Louisiana, and the Greater New Orleans Foundation. Yeah. Three Xavier University graduates who happen to be doctors are debuting their new book, The Pulse of Perseverance. The book details the three men's struggles to overcome adversity as they pursued their dreams of becoming doctors. Two of the three physicians join me now, Dr. Pierre Johnson and Dr. Max Madeir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having
us. Thank you.
When did you guys think to collaborate on this book?
So we met at Xavier University our freshman year in 1998, and all of us were having, you know, struggles during our first semester of college, of coursework at Xavier. And at that point, we saw a vision in each other that we all had, you know, a strong desire to succeed, to become physicians. And at that point, we just bonded together and formed a brotherhood to push ourselves to achieve more and to do better. We graduated in 2002, and then at that time, there was a book called The Pact that came out that also chronicled the lives of three black men that had made a pact to become physicians. And at that time, it was inspirational, and we had a discussion amongst ourselves that we would take it a step further, that we would go through these hurdles, and when we reach the pinnacle of success as board-certified physicians, that we would reach back. We would show, we would, you know, give our testimony to others and try to show the things that we did, that we had to do to overcome adversity.
Now, Dr. Madeir, you're an anesthesiologist and you grew up in Washington, D.C., where inadequate K-12 education has been a major issue. Is that something that you touch on within this book?
It is, but my story is a little bit different. There is an adequate K-12 education across the country, but I came from a family where education was stressed extremely, and my dad was in education. He was actually a university professor at Howard University. So I was fortunate enough to have education, the value of education instilled really early in my household. So by the time I reached high school, I went to a school called Benjamin Banneker Academic High School, which was essentially a small magnet school filled with minority students pulled from around the city. And at that school, instead of stressing sports and things of that nature, which are very, very stereotypical still in our communities, that school stressed a lot of high achievement and volunteerism mm-hmm. and community involvement. So that was also the place that kind of birthed my deep interest in medicine itself.
Dr. Johnson, you are now an OBGYN, but you grew up in Chicago. Let's talk about some of the struggles you had to overcome to get where you are today.
My story is a little bit different. I was a product of the schools that you are referring to, underrepresented K-12. There was deficiency across the board, you know, underfunded, under-resourced institutions is, you know, was where I came from. And getting through that and then actually getting to college where you're challenged, you know, it's one thing to get good grades. So I always got good grades, you know, in high school. So when I got to Xavier, all of this stuff was foreign to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to take tests. I didn't know how to study. All of those, I was deficient in all of those areas. So it set me back, you know. But as far as the other things that I had to overcome and get through, you know, being on the south side of Chicago, gang violence, drugs, those are very prevalent things that, you know, affect children and households, you know, all too common, you know, during my development and kids' development like mine. But my focus and my aim was to not succumb to any of it. I knew how drugs affected my family, my parents, and I didn't want that for my children. I didn't want that for my life. So that was the deterrent for me to stay away and to stay focused on the goals that I placed for myself.
Now, you guys have a book signing and a Q&A forum tonight at Xavier University. Let's talk about how important it is to you to step back on that campus in the position that you're in right now.
Well, I'll tell you what. It's almost like coming full circle. We started our journeys back in 1998, the fall of 1998. We're in 2018. So it's crazy because that was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost going to be a feeling of excitement. I'm definitely going to be nostalgic. I'm going to be highly emotional. It's almost like a homecoming of sorts, because even though we started at Xavier as friends and we're still best friends to this day, life's journeys took us on our separate paths. But the bonds that we created were so strong, and it's just the culmination of what's going to happen tonight at the event. And also what God has in store for us in the future.
And what about for you, Dr. Johnson?
Yeah, I mean, it's so real. You know, I remember it like it was yesterday. Max and I joke, and when we do interviews, we talk about how we first met in Xavier's library in 1998. And, you know, the burning, you know, passion and desire to succeed was very evident, and that's how gravitated toward each other. But through that, we spent 10, 12-hour days in the library every day, you know, and we had just so many obstacles to overcome. And looking at that journey of how it started to now come back as board-certified physicians and to see where we started to actually achieve what we set out to do, I mean, it's, you know, we're going to have to hold back tears at some point, because it's just that powerful. And we just hope that, you know, the kids and adults that we come across, they see that feeling of accomplishment and they see that passion that we have, and they take that to achieve some of the greater things too.
That was Dr. Pierre Johnson and Dr. Max Medeer. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having
me. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Their new book, The Pulse of Perseverance, is being released today with a Q&A forum and book signing at Xavier University tonight at 6 p.m. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre, and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at WWNO.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows, and be sure to catch us next week, right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us. Underwriting programming on WWNO New Orleans Public Radio is a great way to support this station, and it's also a very effective way to reach informed, civic-minded, and educated adults in the New Orleans region with information about your business, service, or organization. Find out how WWNO 89.9 FM can help grow your business by emailing underwriting@wwno.org.